Hello, everyone, and welcome to Press Coverage, part of the Going for Two Live Network. My name is Kyle Senra, and joining me for this fantasy football interview is Scott Simpson. How you doing, Scott?
I'm doing well, Kyle. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited. Big fan of the whole network, everybody behind the scenes. Love Going for Two. Tell Jeff I said hi as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Super appreciative to Jeff Lambert for creating the Going for Two Live Network. And of course, goingfortwo.com, a great website with all sorts of, rankings, articles, and we also have our own Discord, which I guess it's a good time to plug it right away. The Going for Two Discord, super active, especially this time of year, Scott Fishbowl time. There's tons of channels on that, or different other channels as well. I know membership grew really strong in the Discord last year for Scott Fishbowl, and apparently not all Discords are free. So this one is, so anyone can join. So it's as simple as signing up and come join all these great conversations that we have surrounding all our Going for Two content. And again, specifically these, there's tons of Scott Fishbowl mocks. I know it seems like Jeff and Gator J are trying to like be on a crash course, for who can organize the most Scott Fishbowl mocks. So, that's a fun competition to be part of.
I gotta be honest. I've not done one yet. I'm in the DC live draft. I'm going to be on the mic with AJ. We've been asked to kind of, do a show and interview people and kind of not participate in the draft fully, cause we're going to be drafting, but not, and Jeff will be there, as well. And I'm really excited to see him. When you do see your boss, let him know that Scott says his salutations, and, he's in the crab cake league with me here, a local league that we kind of started, after Scott Fish talked about growing the locals about 3 or 4 years ago. Scott Fish, Jeff, Joe Bond, a bunch of people were talking on Twitter about the need just to have these relationships. And so I said, this is a great idea. Let's start a league. And so we did. Let Jeff know that the twice double defending back-to-back champ is on the show. And he welcomes, everybody in the league, Jeff included this year, to see his three-peat. As I come back, and this is all analysts too. These are like big guys, these are not schlubs. Danny Carter is in this league. The Zero RB man himself. We got a local legend, Johnny Cakesallville from the Junkies is in the league. So we got big names. So just let Jeff know. I've noticed he's not won the championship the last 2 years. And I have. So
just, there can only be one, right? I guess I might podcast with Jeff before then, but I feel like you're going to see him before I will, so you may as well let him know.
I'll rub it in his face on Twitter tomorrow, just as soon as I can see him.
Yes, of course. As always, our Going for Two Live Network is sponsored by Underdog Fantasy. And we have a special deposit match as part of the promotion. So if you use the promo code GF2, kind of says it on the hat here, GF2, or scan the fancy QR code for those watching on video, and you aren't yet signed up for Underdog, you'll be able to double whatever you deposit in up to $100. So if you deposit $100, you'll have $200 total to use on different best ball drafts or different pick'ems for other sports, player props, game totals. I don't know. I guess, do they have maybe stuff for awards? Like I think the NHL awards are happening right now. So maybe a little late to enter any of those. I think they're handing out awards. The draft's coming up for both. The NBA draft just happened, but NHL draft, golf, MLS, there's tons of sports. Eventually football will be back. I mean, I'm a CFL fan, so Canadian football. So the football's already back in that sense, but yeah, the NFL is, as we grind through this off season, it's slowly getting there as people complete best ball drafts on Underdog and such. I guess before the season starts, we are here to talk press coverage, off-season show, just getting to know different analysts in the fantasy football world. And so you were chosen, Scott. The theme of this season has been teachers, and you are a teacher. And we're going to touch on that in a little bit, but we are going to start with the origins of your sports fandom. So what were your first sports memories?
Okay, that's a great question. I'll say that my dad was a baseball guy, loved baseball, made me play baseball. And you know, you get involved in sport as a kid, you kind of understand the dynamics of it. But my grandma, I love her to death. She's dead now, but I love her. She's one of my favorite people ever. She was a Raiders fan, and so she would watch the Raiders every Sunday. And we live with grandma, and so my first memory is the Redskins, then Redskins in the Super Bowl against the Raiders. I think it was like 83. I probably was like 3 years old or something. And the Raiders were kicking the crap out of the Redskins, stomping them. And my grandma was so happy. And it was a great memory. The house was a happy house. The Raiders were winning. And we lived in the DC suburbs too. So my grandma was against the grain Raiders fan. She loved Al Davis. She's just a, you know, badass grandma. And so that just got me into it. And then my dad, I remember going home from church, he'd go, "Let's go throw the football." And so throwing the football, my dad kind of cemented it. And then I left my grandma and my dad all behind. And every Sunday, every Monday, whenever football's on, I was watching it from the time I was like 5 years old. So I watched all the Super Bowls. I taped them with VCRs and stuff, and you know, tapes, and you know, run at halftime, like, "I got a new tape." My parents thought I was weird, but I've been obsessed with sports and fantasy sports, you know, for a long time.
Well, yeah, I guess that next question is specifically fantasy. So when did you that fandom from just watching go into participating as well and wanting to play fantasy sports?
So I've got two origin stories. One, I'm kind of a dickhead, so I got to be honest about it, right? And it's I'm not gonna lie. But the other one, I come out, I'm a shining star, right? Inclusive and loving. In 2004, my brother-in-law invited me into a league. It ended up coinciding with something else. I couldn't go to the draft, and so this is before, you know, setting rosters or setting. This is like, you know, 2004. We know what we're doing. And so they drafted for me, and they just drafted me like the shittiest team ever, you know. And so I was like, "I'm not going to be in this league." I couldn't even come to the draft. Like, you scheduled it. I told you I couldn't come. And so it was my brother-in-law. So it's one of those things where, like, you see the person, you know, so you give him a hard time. Like, he's like, "Your team's 0-6, you know." I'm like, I've never even been in the league. You guys scheduled it when I couldn't come, you know, one of those things. And so in 2005, I started my own league. I started with all my buddies, my podcast partner, Mike Collins, Mike Cash Collins, we call him. Over at Fantasy Millionaires, we started it together with a couple of buddies. My wife was in it. We needed a 10th person, so my wife had a list. I drafted off her list for her because she was working. She was a nurse, and she managed her team. She made the playoffs. Next year, we booted her out, got some more guys, went to 12 man, and since 2006, it's been, you know, 12 man straight city. So or you know, whatever gender fluid if you're in there, but it's just been the guys, you know. So, but if my wife's, you know, somehow sneaks back in, we'll let her in, but. There's a waiting list right now of guys. So, but last year, first year, I ever won my championship in my home league too. So it's been a long, I've won other championships, but not the home league one. So, you know, since 2005, it's been every single year. So 18 years of just, I mean, if I do something, I do it all in. I used to play video games, and before they would save your seasons, I would have a notebook and I'd play every game on the schedule, and I would keep stats of all the players myself in a notebook. My mom thought I was just like her dad, my grandpa, who I never met. He died of cancer before I was born, who would gamble, and he would have a binder and he would keep all the stats, and he'd watch three TVs at once. And I was doing the same thing. I was playing video games, watching TV, watching sports. And she said, "Oh my God, my dad, oh my God, my dad's here." So sports has been ingrained, I think, in my psyche and in my soul, kind of from, I didn't have a choice. You know, my dad tried to baseball me. I said, no. NFL all the way, every time.
You kick that baseball away and realize that doesn't feel right. Kicking that ball, there's got to be a different ball to kick.
I mean, I played it for like 10 years for him. So, I mean, what can I mean? I played 3 years of football for me, 10 years of baseball for him. I feel like I gave him a lot, and also no CTE. So I got my brain intact. It's all there. Thank God. Hey,
yeah, we appreciate that. We're happy to have you.
My students too.
Yeah. You don't want to be tripping, apparently, as Jamie might be. And yes, Jamie, I did just move. Like 2 days ago. So yeah, this is a new
nice
place. I'm checking on the YouTube video. It looks like the video resolution might be better. So I think the internet might be better. Hopefully that,
nice.
I'm not tripping on there too, but yeah, we're upgrading here on press coverage.
I like your beard. Your beard's looking good too, by the way. I'm less bearded than I've been. I don't know if you see me when I had the huge beard, but
yeah, I was expecting a little more, but that's okay.
So you know what? My wife said the same thing.
All right. I mean, you do have two kids, so
yeah, that's true. Yeah. I know. Those, I just like to self-deprecate because I was once 330 pounds and there's not a lot you can do but self-deprecate. You got to kind of be the funny guy and you also kind of got to like put yourself down. And, you know, I just remember like, you know, the small penis is such a thing for guys. Immediately I was like, I'm just going to make jokes about having a small penis. And immediately it just cuts the tension. And people be like, you're fat. And I'm like, I got a small penis. They'd be like, oh, I like this guy. All right. Fuck you. I like you. You know, so I've always kind of just been quick on the self put downs and to the point where people are like, you don't need to do that anymore. I'm like, I know, but it's just kind of, you know, the low hanging fruit for me.
Which is hilarious because the show is Fantasy Millionaires, which would imply the exact opposite of not self-deprecated and overinflating, in fact. But yeah,
right,
so
right.
Keep it balanced. Because Fantasy Millionaire, you became a millionaire teaching. But I guess that does bring up the question, when did you first get like the first inclination that you wanted to teach?
You know, that's a good question. I had no inclination to be a teacher my whole life until it hit me. I was in high school, the sports editor of the paper for the you know, journalistic endeavor there. I wanted to be a broadcaster. I wanted to be John Madden. I would broadcast the game. I turned down the football games in my room and watch them, and I would call them. You know, I'd be like, third and goal, the Chicago Bears. You know, they've been struggling all day. Can they get – the right side is wide open. They're in the end zone. My dad would be like, shut up, Jesse, you know, or Scott. Scott's my middle name, by the way. I go by Scott, but my dad would not yell Scott at me. That's his name. You know, he would yell Jesse at me. So, but I love doing that. I kind of like it just it involved me in the game. I was very observant, watching what was happening, seeing the opening, seeing the pass rush, the blitz, whatever it was. I loved it. It got me so into it. And so, you know, that's where I wanted to be. But when I took my gap semester after graduating high school, I wasn't sure what I wanted to pursue right away. So I started doing carpool for my mom and started doing lunch monitoring for her with my little brothers at school. It was right around the corner. And just being around the school, I felt like this is where you are needed in the next generation, not with my brothers necessarily, because, you know, I'd be out of, you know, they're 8 and 10 years younger. So it wasn't necessarily teaching them. But just with the youth, and I, that's never where I saw myself. And that kind of calling came upon me. And next thing you know, 5 years, 4.5 years of school and then 20 years of teaching. And we're here. So it was not what I thought, not where I was going to go. I wanted to do sports. But then, you know, last couple of years with all the kind of tragedy and stuff going on in the world in my life, the sports came out because I just love it so much. I just could not be contained. It could not just me be watching and I have to talk about it. And, you know, so.
So you mean you were practicing all those times in your room and it just led to your experience. You know, now it's speaking in front of students, of course, but I'm sure that you can translate.
Yeah, I've got 5 brothers and sisters too. So I practice talking a lot. They didn't practice listening. that's on them. But no one in my family did. Family meetings were held. My mom and dad be like, all right, we're going to talk. No, we weren't. We're going to fight in front of everybody. And everyone was going to fight with them. It was just terrible time. So, but I did learn, you know what? I do have a gift to communicate. I had to listen to people. My sister was also 60% deaf. So learning how to look people in the eye, learning how to make sure people can see your lips, hear you, know that you're speaking to them and kind of establishing relationships to build that trust to help them learn really didn't come naturally, but I had to learn how to do it with my sister. And so if I can do it with my sister, who's the biggest pain in the ass ever, no offense, Christine, I can do it with a little kid who I have so much more love and sympathy for than my sister, you know? So easy application of family hardship into society, loving other people. And, you know, kids are great. And I have 20 years of doing it. I got kids now who are 29, 30 years old. They got their own families and stuff. And that's cool.
Well, yeah. First off, Gladys is in the chat as well. Absolutely love and adore Scott Simpson name.
Oh man, she's awesome, by the way.
Oh yeah, Gladys is great. She
one of the best.
Two shows now. I know last year you were on the 2-point conversion, which will be on next Monday, by the way. So that's I guess that's kicking off July 3rd, that long weekend. So her and Jay will be back next week. Gladys also has the In No Particular Order, a new show on the network that started this year. And that'll be on Thursdays. So I guess the next episode will be Thursday, July 6th. So yeah, Gladys, super awesome. And it's funny that you mentioned like the siblings. I think because my dad, both my parents were teachers as well. Ooh, and nice. I'm pretty sure my dad taught his youngest sister. I think there might be a 10 or 11 year age gap there. So yeah, I think you did teach her 1 year.
That's fine.
And yeah, so I guess next question, as talking about teaching, have you ever combined both passions together and used fantasy football or fantasy sports as part of a lesson plan?
You know, I honestly have not. Last year, I tried to with my class. I wanted to do like a weekly pick'em where they just pick five winners, right? Just five teams. Who you think? So it was such a debacle the first week. People did not know what to do. They just kept. It was just a Google form. I said pick five. It was simple, and they were picking like every game. I was like, oh my gosh, some people would pick one game. I was like, this ain't going to work. And this was third grade. I'm going back to second grade next year. So I was like, all right, we're going to try to, but I will do word problems that say stuff like, for example, Justin Jefferson is averaging 19, you know, fantasy points per game. If he has five more points than his average this week and 19 points last week, how many points combined will he have in these 2 weeks? So you got to do, you know, two-step multi, you know, dimensional math problem there. We got to show your work. And so they don't read Justin Jefferson necessarily and know him, but a few kids do. So my ballers do. And in third grade, so I'll do that, but I don't really get to, you know, do too much of it in the scripted curriculum is there for a reason, you know, keep us at bay.
Do any of the kids do the gritty?
Yeah, they do. And I'll correct them if they do it inappropriately. So what I mean by that is if you do something and you achieve something, then you can hit the gritty. When you walk back to your seat after putting your clipboard away or something, you can't hit the gritty. So I had one of the kids, he hit the gritty after he just, you know, did something regular. I said, no, you win this game or you get, you know, something great happens. Then you hit the gritty. It's a celebration of greatness, not of just mediocrity. So I do want the gritty done, but I want it done in a fashion that's not just like I'm going back to my seat and I want people to look at me, you know? So.
Yeah. Do it like when Jair Alexander knocked that pass away from Jefferson, like that was right. An appropriate time. To
right. 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 If you get first in line at the end of the day, going out to recess, then hit the gritty real quick, you know? So.
Go Pack. I'll leave that for Tim Strobel, who does a DFS on Fridays. They always end with a Go Pack Go. There's a few of that because there's the Dynasty Saturday Night. And again, all this is on the Going for Two Live network. Josh always ends with Go Irish or Go Braves because he likes Notre Dame and the Atlanta Braves. So there's Go Pack Go. We'll leave it at that. Now, you know, maybe not in lesson plans, but can you draw any parallels between your time teaching and all your experiences in the fantasy football community?
That's a really good question. As I thought about that, I would say that, you know, using communication, it's a really important key in both to be effective at what you're thinking about, breaking it down, being able to explain it, being able to give people feedback and interact. And so for me, I don't get to do as much of that on live shows with people. And sometimes there's the chat. Bo gets in there. People, there will be that. But just more on Twitter and stuff, you know, interacting, talking about players as we kind of get going and looking at from the analytical side. And being able to kind of state what I think and be clear about it. I think that's a good thing I do. And then also relationship building. You have to do that in the classroom. And then you have to do that in the fantasy football industry too. Not to be successful. I'm not making any millions of dollars, but just to you know, like be on shows and have relationships with people and go and have other people on your shows. And it really is a network of relationships. And so I think you understand that in society, you need relationships, but specifically in classrooms, people need to have relationships. Students need to. So you have to foster relationships with kids. You have to teach them how to communicate, teach them how to talk to each other, teach them how to take roles and not be in charge. And then you be the leader. Now you talk. So kind of establishing equity. And so in fantasy football, I'm not establishing equity with people, but, you know, giving people the voice, letting people come on, trying to give people opportunities. And then also having people give me opportunities. There's a lot of, I guess, deeper connection than just surface connections.
Definitely. And we'll dive a little deeper into something you talked about before the show started. And actually you did just reference it now that you've been teaching for 20 years. And I guess you wanted to show something special that your spouse.
So I
think of an S word for maid, but I guess.
Yeah. My partner, my lady friend, you know, my wife. So I've been teaching 20 years and it's been in public schools. And I've done different jobs. I've been primarily second grade teacher, but I've been third grade teacher. I've also been a mentor teacher who was outside the classroom, who went around, observed, and coached new educators and underperforming educators, evaluated them, gave them support, and then, you know, hopefully they met standard, and most of them did. A couple of them didn't. That's why I was there to try to help them meet standard, and they, a couple people did. So long story short, though, I thought there was a 20-year pin for my organization. I thought I was going to get it the last day of school because I'd always seen them get it. It's actually 25. So the last day of school, I was a little discouraged. I came with my wife. I was like, oh, poor me. I didn't get a pin. You know, cry, cry, cry. My wife listened to me, and she went out and made had one made herself, designed it herself, of the giving tree. And I'll put it up here. Let's see if I can put it up there. And it is says 20 years. And the giving tree is one of my favorite stories. It's a very selfless story, a story I read to my kids every year. And I told them this year, I've been the little kid. And now as a 44-year-old man, as an adult, I'm the tree. You know, so your role changes. It's such a deep book. Whatever season of life you're in, you can relate to different parts of that book. And so it was really cool that my wife did that. That's one of the most meaningful things I think anybody's ever done who has not been an educator, who's not, you know, walking in my shoes, but who still kind of sees my journey and understands the length and depth of it. And meant a lot. You know, I told her I'm going to cry later. So I will, for sure. But not now, because, you know, that's not, I don't want to get low-T'd right from the beginning. I don't want my rep to be like low-T Denny. That's not how I want to be.
I mean, to be fair, we are 20 minutes in, so it wouldn't quite be the beginning.
Right.
So
you could, okay, good. Okay, good. I'll cry at the end, you know.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'll talk about my dad. We'll cry when I do that.
Well, I was going to talk about who have been your biggest influences during your life so far. So
actually, that is the next one. So maybe we'll cry right now. I don't know. Yeah, I would say it's my dad for sure, good and bad. You know, my dad had a rough childhood. He his dad was in the army, so he went to like 13 different schools, just moving around. His dad voluntarily went to Vietnam as a chaplain to save souls, to love people, and everyone loved him. And everybody wanted him on the chopper. God was not going to kill that man, and they knew it. And they wanted him every day. They wanted just to be around him, you know, because he was a safety to everybody. But my dad hated that he left, and so my dad left home when he was like 15, and really didn't know how to be a dad when he was 22. 7 years later, shocker, he didn't know what he was doing. And so, you know, he was just such a strong personality, just like a force of like, I'm going to conquer, because he had to, because he left home at 15. He did not go to live in Germany. He stayed here in Maryland and married my mom when he was 19 and she was 18. And stuff you could do in the 70s. I mean, it was just wild back then. You know, you had like $800. You're like, we're going to buy a house, you know? So they didn't buy a house, but yeah, I would say for sure, you know, his passion for life. And then also he had a debilitating injury when he was younger that caused him just to be in extreme amount of pain all the time. And still is. He's had surgeries and different things. It's his neck and his joints and his, you know, spine. It's just not good. But it was very intense in my family growing up. And so, you know, now as a dad, I tried to not be my dad as much as I could, because I'm my own person, you know, and I rebelled against my dad like he did against his dad to establish my own manhood in life. But I am my dad deep underneath. Those behaviors, those core behaviors are just there. That's how you get passed on your epigenetics, your genetics, all those things. They just kind of, you know, so I'm undoing a lot of the things that are not good, but things that are great, you know, they're right here. They're why I'm on this, you know, podcast right now. My dad was just the most gregarious, loving, outgoing, kindest person who, you know, would just talk to anybody anytime, give anybody anything he had just to, you know, share life with them and to get them to their next thing and, you know, fix their car and build their house, whatever it is. He's a builder, he's a creator. So, you know, I'd say him for sure. You know, not so much in the recent years, though. I would say in the last 25 years, though, my podcast partner, Mike Cash Collins, over at the Fantasy Millionaires, he is my best friend. So we've been best friends for 25 years, like call each other on the phone, you know, talk for 3 hours, like cry, like all, like I don't have a relationship with anybody like this. I've ever, you know, thought I could have a relationship with anybody like this. But I mean, he knows everything about me pretty much. And that's been cool. That's been really great as a man to go through my daughter's cancer, my other daughter's mental health stuff and my own mental health stuff, and to have a best friend who I can just be like, hey, man, I'm struggling. My family is driving me crazy. And he can be like, yeah, I understand. Yeah, I have a family too. They're driving me crazy right this second, you know? So a lot of love has been, you know, shared my way by Mike. And then the last one, of course, is just my girls. You know, I live with three ladies. So they don't influence me like directly. It's more indirectly, but I have to change who I am to be a better person for them. And so, I don't
want to influence your behavior.
Yeah, I don't want to run all the time and be healthy, but I got to live long now. So, now I'm waking up at six in the morning. I'm already running and exercising, and I'm going against Mike Cash Collins. We're doing a weight loss competition before Canton. So when you see us in Canton, ask us who is skinnier, me or Mike? Who's the, right now? I'm 215.0, and he's 215.8. It's a race to 205.
Racing, I guess it's like, golf, you want the lower number, right? Like, yes. The lower number wins. So it's heck not yeah. Every sport you want the, like football, you obviously want the most points.
Right. Yeah. The Patrick Mahomes.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to go with the other green and gold team and say the Edmonton Elks. They didn't get the message because they've lost now 19 straight home games. So.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Man, that's terrible.
They were showing a stat of the game during the game the other night. I think 20 is the North American record, and I can't remember what team it was.
The Buccaneers or something. No, I'm making that up.
Yeah, sorry, honestly, it might be. I can't remember. I think it was the Pittsburgh Penguins in hockey.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm a Washington Capitals fan. Ovechkin all the way. I like that. That's good.
Because I'm pretty sure that would have been the year, I guess, before the lockout.
That's why they got Crosby.
So that 20 game losing streak probably helped.
Yeah.
I don't know that the Elks are going to have that same type of luck.
You're not getting Crosby. No, it's not happening.
No, I think if there was a Crosby, he'd want to play in the NFL, not the CFL. So
no, that's true.
But the CFL, one of my big favorite hobbies. I love watching it. Love playing some CFL DFS contests like that. That wouldn't really count for this question because, of course, fantasy football is more than a hobby for us. But, Scott, what are some of your favorite hobbies?
So I had to think about this one a lot because my life has been all consumed with my family the last, couple of years, and then also fantasy football content. And but I would say before that consumed me, and then also something I do love is comedy and live comedy, going to comedy. I probably have gone to 30 live shows in, on the last like 7-8 years. And it's, just one of my favorite things to do. I go with my friend, Mike Cash Collins. We've gone to several shows this year. We've gone to 4. We're going to go to 2 more. I'm going to Anthony Jeselnik by myself because nobody can go to the concert. So I'm just going to go and have a nice seat next to me open and laugh by myself, which I've already done for Nick Kroll. I'm supposed to go to Nick Kroll with Mike. He got sick. And I'm by myself. It doesn't matter. This makes me laugh. Like it's not an addiction, but it's something that I used to let yourself be taken by the comedian. I have morals, but when a comedian's saying bullshit, I don't have morals because it's not real. It's so much fun just to laugh at something, and it's terrible maybe, but in real life, it's not real life. Like you're watching a bullet go through an actor and them die in fake life, like in the Matrix, but you're watching it with words. So it's a little bit, it's hard to comprehend for some people, but I love live comedy. It's one of my favorite things ever. So going to live comedy, and then also just watching specials and kind of seeking the laughter and the memes. And if you follow me on Twitter, a lot of times I'm joking for all the off season. I'm joking. I'm not giving you analyst stuff right now because of the busyness, but I'm just giving people memes and silliness and trying to put some, laughter into the mix. So
I guess we end the show always with the high five sections, the top five, like you're good to answer all five of those categories.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes the guests will want one subbed out and I'll last minute change one. Cause like you talking comedy, I was going to maybe add that in, but like, who is your favorite stand-up comedian?
Ooh, that's a good one. It's tricky because it ebbs and flows. And like right now, I really enjoy Rick Glassman. And most people don't even know who Rick Glassman is.
I don't either.
No, you don't. So he does a podcast and he's had on like Bert Kreischer. He's had on Mark Norman, Sam Morrell, a bunch of comics that are kind of more up and coming. And he's just super funny to me. But most people don't know. So I'm so far in the wormhole that I do like Ricky Gervais. That's a good call. Ricky Gervais is hilarious. You know, his just in the face of all the political correctness and stuff, I do appreciate that. He's one of my favorite. I'm trying to think of Tom Segura probably is one of my favorites. Bill Burr is up there as well. You know, people can say the standard Dave Chappelle stuff, but I haven't seen Dave Chappelle live. I've seen Tom Segura live a few times. I enjoy Joe Rogan. I'd say the funniest live performances I've ever seen, one of them would be Rory Scovel. If you don't know who Rory Scovel is, go watch him on Netflix. He did a show in DC where I was peeing my pants. Like, we were dying. It was about a month ago. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. So Rory Scovel, check him out. He does a stand-up on Netflix called Rory Scovel Tries Stand-Up for the First Time. And he crushes it. So please, those are some of my favorite. How about you? Who are some of your people that you like?
Well, so I would say George Carlin and Bill Hicks.
Bill Hicks, yeah.
Yeah, the two for me, that they rant so well, but so intelligently. Use of words is great. The topics are kind of outrageous at times, but that's what makes it so shocking. So, and especially Carlin, sometimes it's just so simple of an idea that could lead to a whole topic. And
he breaks down why how the ruling class uses the middle class and the poors to fight against each other. And so you got the mids and the poors fighting it all out in the class warfare and the race warfare and the blue versus red, while the elites just, you know, they do that. And so he breaks that all down a long time ago. And so for people who've been paying attention, you're like, duh. So he's almost like a prophet too. So Hicks and Carlin, those are two of the best. So good calls. I'm down with both those guys.
No, yeah. Unfortunately, I forgot the chance to see either live. I would say of my favorite comedy performance that I've gone to see live was Michael Little. I believe he's Canadian, and that's why we're in here in Canada. I remember seeing one of his specials or him on a show one time, and then the opportunity to see him live, and I was like, I was really impressed with seeing him on TV or seeing the special, and then I got the chance to see him live, and he was just as funny in person. So that would be because I guess the answer for you, does it change TV special versus live performance? Like, could there be a best for each?
Yeah, I mean, live is so much different too. Like Patrice O'Neill, we went to a live show before, like his last live show before he passed, and it was in DC. And he was doing crowd work for half the show. And he was just picking on this beautiful lady in front and an ugly guy who was the date. And he was just like, man, how are you? Like, you know, the whole house was drunk. It was the late show. It was wild. It was so much fun. And it was so loud. And I think they recorded it too. I think it was one of the shows that they actually have audio of it. It was so funny. And so I liked him before that, but then that made him, like, you know, just one of my favorite ever performances. I would say his stand-up on TV is funny, but it's not the funniest. But that night, you know, he was great. And same thing with Big Jay Oakerson. One time, he's funny, but one time in DC too, his crowd work was so incredible that he like, just when you're crying, when you can't stop laughing and you're getting, like, you know, cramps and you're like,
this. You say it hurts the belly so much, but you love it. So.
Yeah. If you're a Stephen King fan, you know about the gunslinger, you got Delandalode, you know, you're laughing and you're dying. You're getting all your energy sucked out of your body at this point from these comedians. So that live performance, you can't take away. Now, you know what, you come down to your basement, you have a couple beers, whatever, a couple, you know, medical enjoyments, whatever you want. And then you tuck in and watch a show. You can just laugh for a long time too. So it's different. I like both of them. I can't afford live comedy that often. Don't tell my wife, but you know, I'm going to three more shows this year.
Just three. It's a finite amount. Just three. Gladys asking about female comedians. There's, you know, obviously there's quite a few female comedians. I can't remember her name, but she was another Canadian, and it's one of my favorite lines, and it's essentially like, you know, for people, tourists coming and they think, oh, Canada, it's so small and blah, blah, blah. It's, you know, the idea is that Canada, it's not so bad once you're in it. It's like a giant lake of water, right? Like, you know, the cold water, like, you know, you don't want to jump in before, like, you feel afraid or you know, it's going to be cold. So that, like, that hesitation, but once you're in the cold lake, then your body adjusts to it. And it doesn't feel so bad. It's not so bad once you're inside it. Canada's like a giant lake. Unfortunately, I can't remember her name, but that's.
I'm just going to tell you this, tiny non sequitur. I will get to my favorite female comedians. We're going to Canada this year in July and beginning of August. My children are going to a camp, and then we are going to go travel around Quebec and go do some national parks and go just kind of relax in the beautiful outdoors. So I cannot wait to see Canada. Really excited. It's like a lifelong dream to come visit the neighbor to the north. So just wanted to put that out there because Canada's awesome. And I have no complaints. I'm curious, about
you're saying Quebec. Are you talking about Quebec City itself or the province of Quebec?
I think we're going to go to Quebec City a little bit, but we're going to kind of be to the east, like kind of maybe northeast above it. Like we're going to go up past, like there's like a little inlet or like a little river, and we're going to go into like a more national foresty type area where you're kind of in a cabin kind of by yourself, and you know, there's trees everywhere and there's nobody around but you. And so, but I think we will go into the city and have a little bit of time in the city, but I'm excited about the wilderness. You know, I think we're going to do like a couple days in the wilderness, a couple days in Quebec City, and then we're going to go over to Maine and New Hampshire and do a little kind of that loop. And so I'm just excited to be with my wife for the first time without my children for 2 weeks in 12 years. You know, like I'm like, I can't wait to meet you again, honey. So
it's funny because the one thing going back to the, you know, when it was just you and her, because Quebec City really does feel like, well, you know, part of it just feels like a normal city, but there's the part that's certainly up near the lake and near the big castle and near the Plains of Abraham. Like that's old school Quebec, like old school. Like this city was formed in the 1600s, and you can right. tell, like it's yeah. very unique. There's, I don't think there's another city in North America quite like it. You might see cities like that in Europe, but it's quite an experience if you could see old Quebec City. It's,
yes.
I know last time my wife and I was part of our honeymoon in 2019, we went the whole East Coast and we were able to stay in an Airbnb that was right in old Quebec. So that was,
I might have to afterwards ask you some recommendations because my wife is a Europe file. I lived in the UK for a year as a Fulbright exchange teacher to the UK. And so then we traveled all around Europe. Basically, she took me on all of her travels, and we went to Germany and to, you know, France and to Spain and to Greece and to Italy. Literally, we went to 15 countries, and she's so excited about Quebec City because that is the lore is that it is more, European. It's more old. You have just the history behind it, which is more. Kind of missing in America. Like this Taco Bell was made last Thursday and it's one of the best in the state. You're like, oh gosh.
It just happens to be across the street from another Taco Bell.
Right, there's three more Taco Bells down the street, but there's also a Del Taco if you're into Del Taco. So you're like, ah, I got it.
Reversing it, yes.
Yeah. I love all those memes that show like a beautiful field or like a beautiful mountain. It's like, there'd be a great Walmart right in the middle of here. You know, just like, ah.
I guess I kind of stole that joke from, is it, it's not Patton Oswalt, it's Lewis Black, who's, I found the end of the universe. So, you know, it's a Starbucks directly across the street from another Starbucks. Like
in New York City. Yeah. I love Lewis Black too. His rants and anger. And like, I remember one of his specials, he's like, I woke up in Boston for the 9th straight day and it was grayer and grayer and grayer. You know, so he has a lot of fun with that. Just, you know, just anger about the terrible things in life. And it makes me laugh a lot. So I
very Carlin-esque that it's still very intelligent, though. Like,
he's a
madman with his rage, but very calm and collected with the content coming out of his mouth.
Yeah, very, very intelligent. The cerebral nature of that, you can just see it, as he performs. I love him. I never got to see him live. I'd love to see him live, actually. That'd be, you know, so.
Yeah, for sure. I guess that would be one of the better ones.
Yeah.
Great ones right now.
Oh, for sure.
That are still with us. So, yeah. Apparently, yeah. I'm the 102. Gladys is the 101. And I can accept that, Jamie. Gladys is.
Okay.
And Gladys loves the casual dip of Fulbright exchange teacher. Like, I guess that's pretty fancy. It's almost like Quebec City. You don't hear that too often.
No, you don't. And actually, in my county, I don't think it's been any elementary since me in 2009 and 10. So, 13 years. Because the program changed a little bit and I just don't think people really understand how to do it or what to do. It's, someone came to me. It was like, what's those moments where you just, the universe aligns for you. my wife was like, hey, I just heard about this Fulbright program where you can go live abroad and teach. And I'd love to do that because, you know, I want to go back and live across in Europe because she'd done it in college. And I said, well, okay, well, whatever. Then I went to my class. My grad school professor was like, in the middle of the lesson, he's talking about curriculums and the way that they're presented. And he goes, by the way, if you ever get a chance to do a Fulbright scholarship, let me tell you about this Fulbright teaching exchange. And I'm just like, what the hell is this? My wife just told me about this today. And then he talked about it for 5-10 minutes. Okay. He's like, I'd write your recommendation. He said to anybody, you know, if you're involved. I was like, okay, whatever. Next day, I get an email from the school system. It's like, hey, Fulbright, blah, blah, blah. I'd never seen any of these, never heard about it. So in 3 days, I said, okay, fine. I think somebody's trying to tell me something. Did my application, never thought about it because I said, you're not going to get picked. No one ever gets picked. You're not going to get picked. I got picked right away. I was so scared because I didn't even want, I was doing it for my wife. I'm not even impressive. That's the thing, Gladys. I'm just a humble husband whose wife wanted to live abroad. And so I figured out what I could do to help her. But in that, I did gain a lot of experience and things I've never been able to do without that. So I'm so grateful. My wife was just pushing me to do it. And it's an achievement by doing it, not getting picked. I would say that's just, you know, it's my wife voodooing. So yeah, super voodoo.
I guess to the topic of female comedians, I would say more than.
Oh yeah,
standard,
I forgot.
There's a sketch comedy show called Baroness von Sketch, and it's four females. They play all the characters. They write all the sketches. Yeah, that's a hilarious sketch show. I think of Royal Canadian Air Force. There was a female on that. Another great sketch show. This Hour is 22 Minutes. These are all Canadian shows. And it seems like there's always great female cast members on all those shows. So.
You know,
I guess I would lean that direction.
That sounds kind of like a, oh my gosh, my brain, kids in the Hall, but with a female cast. So,
yeah,
not the same exact, but kind of, you know, like a troupe, like a group.
So Luba Goy, she's part of Royal Canadian Air Force. That actually started way back in the like 70s and 80s as a radio show, and eventually in the 90s got to CBC picked it up as a TV show. So if I had to pick a female comedian, I probably would pick her, actually. Great,
very cool,
great sketch writer, great impersonator, and I know eventually later on they got a second female, but for the first part of it she was doing the impersonation for all the female characters, or most. Sometimes one of the guys would play a female because if you got to represent, you have to represent, right? So, if I had to pick one female comedian, I'd probably pick her, Luba Goy.
Yeah, I would say I love Maya Rudolph. She is in Big Mouth as one of the main hormone monstresses, playing off of Nick Kroll's character, who's a hormone monster as well. And she is phenomenal. I think she even won an Emmy for it. Like, she carries the show at points, just with her energy, with her voice. She is amazing. So I would say, you know, she's not doing stand-up necessarily, but I do love her comedic performance in that. And then but stand-up wise, you know, Eliza Schlesinger has a show on Netflix. It's like a sketch comedy show, and it's really funny. It's hilarious. And it's there's some guys on there, but it's more female-led, female focused, and I mean she crushes it. So I love that. And then I just saw Tiffany Haddish on Bert Kreischer's tour, and she was hilarious. So you know, there's a lot of good ladies in comic in different venues. The thing for me is being a guy. Guys, I just, there's a connection I have with them that I just, you know, like, you're a dirty, nasty guy. You get me, you know, like Tom Segura's stories about like pooping and his wife thinking he was dying and him just being like, no, I'm just pooping. She's like, we're going to the doctor right now. You know, like, I can relate to my wife, like, saying the exact same things to me and me feeling oddly uncomfortable because I'm just going to the bathroom. My wife's like, are you okay in there? And I'm like, leave me alone, woman. You're not my nurse, you know? So I do love the ladies, though, but I feel a little judged because I'm so far beneath them. Let's just be honest.
You can relate to the men more.
Oh, yeah. I'm a big fat loser. So the women are amazing in general. They don't stoop to the lows that the guys do with the comics, and I can relate to the lows of the guys. I mean, some of the ladies do too, and they're hilarious as well. I don't, doesn't have to be trash for me to like it, but like guys do kind of just get the id of a guy and the stupidness of a guy. Like Nate Bargatze, he's hilarious too. Just a down to earth Southern, you know, just like my wife tells me I'm dumb. I'm not even allowed to use the checkbook, dumb. You know, so he crushes it with with the dumb guy thing, you know. So I'm into the ladies as well. They'll get me going, but you know, more of the ladies putting down the guys and then me laughing at that. So
the next question is, what's one thing no one in the fantasy community knows about you? I'd say no one except Matt, probably, because I'm assuming your co-host Matt probably knows
everything. No, Mike.
Or Mike.
Yes.
New as an M name. I was listening. It was the cash part that distracted me.
My cash counts. The cash is the key for him, you know. So
yeah. Cash Collins. Yeah.
Yeah. He actually, the reason I call him that is he's won the most cash out of anybody I know in fantasy football. Like he's won thousands of dollars. Like he's probably up like 10 G's. So in like the 18 years we've played, he's probably got 11 or 12 championships. So yeah, he's good. He's good, folks. I've been kicking his ass last couple of years in all these leagues too, but
it's because you probably were listening and learned from him.
I did. And I'm the co-host, and I've been getting things.
So watch the Fantasy Millionaires, folks.
it'll do hey, you good. I'm not gonna lie. This is the truth. This is, I played three. I was in Scott Fish and other larger leagues, tournaments, things like that. But I played in five redraft leagues last year, PPR. This is actually one of the questions. And so I don't want to get into it too much, but PPR redraft leagues for money. And I won three of them. So three out of five winning. I made the playoffs in four out of five, and I got bounced in the first round, one of them, and I didn't make it in one. So, I mean, I won $1,500, $1,800, something like that. I tell no lies, you know? So, but here's what you guys are going to know. No one knows. And you guys still kind of won't know either, but which jersey I'm rocking to the Fantasy Expo this year, but I'm going to drop a hint here on the show that it is mayor approved. So if you're a Scott Simpson follower, you know about the mayor of Miami. He approves. The mayor approves the jersey. So, or the, you know, yeah, well, it's going to be a jersey. So he's got to figure out who it's going to be.
Mayor and there's Marino?
Yeah, well, it might
not be a football player, though. You didn't specify it had to be a football player.
No, well, it's a football player. I can tell you that. Okay. It's somebody who has been a Miami Dolphin before. It's going to be a Miami Dolphins jersey. But I'm not going to tell you or tell people who it's going to be. Because there's a lot of different people could be. And people don't know, Tua Nation, Tua Anon, came after me a couple months ago because I took a screen grab of an offseason workout where he kind of like faked a handoff, kind of like half-heartedly, turned around through Tyreek Hill. No one's there.
That's right. I remember seeing this blow up.
Then they just started calling me like a cuck. Like, that's the thing. You figure out, like, when you get mass, like, slammed by a group of fans, you figure out their favorite words. You know, beta boy, soy boy, cuck, you know, all these, like, real alpha soy fake.
Is pretty funny. Like,
But the thing, they're all hilarious if they are jokes, but they're not. Like, that's the thing. Then you go to their page, and then they're doing this to everybody. You know what I mean? Like anybody who doesn't fit the macho man, Randy Savage mold is a soy boy beta cuck, you know, whatever. So, but that was fun. And so I dubbed myself the mayor of Miami because I angered like a million people. Like everybody in Miami was upset at me that weekend and they gave me so much power over them. So I'm going to be rocking a Miami jersey. So come see me. You'll see. I'll have a jersey on. I'll be there. I'll be still mayoring.
Warfield.
No, it's somebody in the last 20 years. So I don't know. Is Paul Warfield last 20 years?
He retired in 1974.
Yeah.
I think he would have been on the perfect season team.
Oh, no. Yeah. No. And I'm not like, and here's the thing. I'm not like doing anything degrading to the jersey or being like a jerk to the jersey. The mayor upholds jersey traditions and it's no mocking of anything. We're wearing a nice jersey. So
it's ironic to get the inside story. Just seeing you in the Dolphins jersey is funny enough. You don't have to alter it.
No, I don't. I'm just going to represent. And then people are going to like think I'm a Dolphins fan, which listen, I'm not a fan of any team. I'm a fan of the NFL. I watch any game, anytime, any player. Do I like certain organizations better than others? Yeah. The Washington Commanders organization. I hate them. They're terrible. They've ruined this franchise. They're the worst thing ever. You've had
such firsthand experience.
Yeah. I hate them. Yeah. I used to be a Redskins fan as a little kid. And I loved them with all my heart when Joe Gibbs was there. And even Jack Kent Cook, who's a terrible person, was there. But I loved them. And then when Dan Snyder came, I hated him. And he drove us out of fandom. Like, I quit in 2014. I'm like, I'm not going to be a fan anymore. It's been 10 years going on, 9, 10 years. And I've just been so much happier as a person. And it actually helped fuel my love for fantasy football, turning it to the next level, making me a content creator. Because if you're biased, if you're just focusing on your team all the time, like, you need the global scope of the NFL. And I love it. It's kind of freed me to be me now, and to love every fantasy player and to look at it through a different eye.
Yeah, I guess Chase Vernon from FF Intervention. He's also, I think, from the DC area.
From Virginia.
Yep. The DMV, as they.
Mm-hmm. The DMV.
I think he's same thing. He used to be a Washington fan, and then no longer. Yeah, liberating and freeing. It's all about fantasy, right? And I guess that is the time of the episode to get to the fantasy specific questions. So, you hinted at it earlier. Right. So what is your preferred league format? Yeah, I try as best I can.
Yeah, so I'm going to say I like playing Dynasty and kind of those kind of, you know, specialty leagues. I've got a Devi league I'm in with the Devi Masters and all that. I mean, it's really cool, right? I love that. But I just say a good old PPR, 12-person PPR league, where you've got a QB, one QB, you've got two running backs, you've got two wide receivers, you've got a tight end, you got two flexes, and then you got yourself a defense and a kicker. So, you know, I like that. That kind of gets me going. Now, some people do a three wide receivers and then one flex. I like two flexes. It just kind of gives you more option. You can put a tight end in there. You can go double tight end. You can do, you know, whatever you want to do. So, or triple tight end, you know.
Yeah, I always, going the two tight end build when there's only one flex spot is really difficult, because you're essentially – like the rest of the league is playing with a flex spot, and you're basically playing it as a two tight end league.
Yeah.
You got Kelsey and Andrews, you're fine with that. But like, yeah, right. if there's as long as there's that other flex spot, it still gives you that flexibility. And if you're using one as a tight end almost every week, that's fine, because you still have the other one.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I'll play in other leagues, but not half point. It's gotta be PPR and no standard. I've never played in standard. I'm never going to play in standard. If I see a pass, That's a point. I know. I can't go back.
If I tried to catch a football, I'd probably fail most times. So it is a skill. Like, right. Getting a reception is not nothing. Now, you know, reception behind the line of scrimmage doesn't necessarily help the NFL team, but if it's a lateral throw, then you better catch it. It's a fumble. So,
I mean, listen, in the gambling world, it counts as an attempt. It counts as a reception. So I count it as a point like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's in the gambling world, it has a foothold. So I can't pretend it doesn't exist.
If the completion is a skill by the quarterback, then so is the reception on the other end.
Thank you. Smart people on the show. I got to tell you.
Well, I was going to say, thank you. I guess there's only two of us. So if you're saying smart people, I guess it's
all the chat. Gladys, Jamie. I mean, yeah, good people.
Jamie, I guess I know Jamie co-hosts the Fantasy Cheat Sheet. I think they're on tomorrow night. Normally they're two Tuesdays, unless they were on last week again. But yeah. Check out the Fantasy Cheat Sheet and all the other going for two.
For sure.
So I guess maybe you already answered this, but with that previous question, but what is one rule in fantasy that you have to have or you feel like should be in every league?
Yeah, you know, it is definitely PPR, but if you want to kind of drill down into it more, you don't have to have a kicker. So for me, it's more like what you don't have to have anymore. I'm accepting formats where you don't need a kicker. I like a defense. I don't like the defense to get you 30 points or anything like that, unless they get two touchdowns and hold them to a blank sheet or something like that. But I don't like a high scoring defense, but I do enjoy, a non kicker league. I'm going to just say it right now. I'm sorry, Denny, who drafted a kicker. He drafted the Buffalo Bills kicker in like the 11th round of Scott Fishbowl last year. I think he averaged like 4 points a game or something. It was like, you could have gotten another quarterback. So, you know,
And it's funny because I thought last year the kickers made more sense than Scott Fishbowl, because the previous season they got negative points for missing point after attempts, missing field goals.
Right.
And last year those negative points were eliminated. So I felt last year did make more sense to go and get two or three kickers and just play them in, knowing, okay, they're at least going to get you something.
Right. Not in the 11th round, though. Not when you could draft. I mean, I don't know. You could have drafted anybody else in the 11th round. Like, I was drafting running back still, you know? So I don't know. It was weird. I love Denny though. He's a great guy. Not going to talk too much shit about him.
I'm going to go back in my, cause I do tweet out all the, all my Scott Fishbowl picks. I have to go really far back and see if I maybe know where that, like where I, if I drafted a kicker, because I finished, I think 98th last year. So I actually did pretty well.
Crushed it. I like that.
I had never made the playoffs in Scott Fishbowl, but I've also never had a losing record. So it was weird. I was always in that, like, okay, you're 7-5. You're like, you're just past the 50%, but not enough to make it to the playoffs. But last year I actually did really well. I'm going to see. Did I draft a kicker? I just pick one up off the waiver after whatever week, and then just wrote out that production.
But, okay. I'll give you my team. It's not great, but I had Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, Tua, Mike Evans, Breece Hall, Mike Williams, Darnell Mooney, Damian Harris, Mike Gesicki, James Cook, Ronald Jones, Albert O, Michael Carter, Jalen Tolbert, Marlon Mack, KJ Osborne, Nico Collins, Paris Campbell, Sammy Watkins, Snoop Connor, Rob Gronkowski, and Devin Duvernay. I did not do well last year. It was a terrible, terrible year last year.
Well, I know for myself, like I know in previous years, like I've made a mistake, like right off the bat. Like I went, you know, in my first year in Scott Fishbowl, I guess that would have been 2019. I went Zeke instead of Christian McCaffrey, and McCaffrey was the RB1 that year. And it's, it was you get bonuses for 100-yard rushing games. And I thought, oh, Zeke's going to do that almost every week. And he could still get a chance at the 50-yard receiving games. And I just thought like that was the best way to balance it. But no, McCaffrey, I think he went for 1,000. So that was definitely the way. One year I went Antonio Brown on the Raiders instead of Leonard Fournette. And that was a really good year for Fournette. Still in the Jaguars, I think. And he smashed that year. It might have been Bucks Fournette. I can't remember. But that was a brutal mistake because Antonio Brown didn't do anything that year. Last year, though, I started Mahomes, Eckler, Tua. I think that, like, especially Mahomes and Eckler, that gave me the foundation to set me far. Once I didn't have Tua, I kind of lost some steam. Ultimately, I didn't make it to the final week. I got to the second last week, but still, that was a lot further than I did.
That's pretty good, though.
For sure. Again, having not made the playoffs before, that was pretty good. Looking through my picks. This is great radio. I guess I did actually. Okay, so I selected Tyler Bass in the 17th round. That's the fun thing with Fishbowl is you see that massive swings in ADP because, like you said, Mike went and he took Bass, I guess, 6 rounds before that. So
I checked; it was the 9th round when Denny took him actually.
And you know what? That crazy. Might not even have been the earliest, right? I'm sure someone went first round. Bills
right. fan. Right, right.
I know. Oh, I drafted Bryan Edwards.
Oops.
I took two kickers. I took Robbie Gould as well in the last round.
See, that makes sense, though. Not reaching for him in the 9th round. Like, I'd give Denny a hard time.
Tim Patrick in the 13th. That was a blown-up pick.
Yeah. I mean, I like him this year. Don't tell anybody.
I mean, you might be able to get him a lot later, though.
I'll be snatching him for sure.
All right. So now, I guess we dove into a bit of history, but who's your all-time favorite QB1, RB1, wide receiver 1, and tight end 1 for fantasy?
Okay. So I kind of try to pick people I've had on my teams because I can't just say players I've never had. So QB1, Peyton Manning, when he was at his zenith of those, you know, 3 or 4 years, there's just nothing like him. You know, I went up against him in some of these leagues too. And I got my ass handed to me in one of these playoff games. You know, he scored 4 touchdowns, 5 touchdowns. So Manning was super dominant in the, you know, time frame where he was dominant. So it wasn't for as long. Maybe Brady had a super long career in fantasy and ebbs and flows, ups and downs, but Peyton in that little time was just fire. So, and that was when quarterbacks, 4 points or 6 points was a kind of a big issue in our league. And we started to go 6. We updated from 4 to 6 back in then. And this was just like, oh my God, Peyton Manning's like crack cocaine, you know, like he's just unstoppable. So, well,
yeah, I mean, I guess from 2004 to like 2000, I guess really 11, he did have the off year, but like, you know, a couple years with the Broncos. But like at that time, not everyone was throwing for 5,000 yards. Like the NFL's really changed in like the later part of his career. So that early mid part of his career, you know, you maybe had a Brady like in 2007 where he had 350 touchdowns. But other than that, like there weren't really guys competing with him. So it really gave you like a tier of 1 or just 2. Guys like Roethlisberger and Manning, they were winning Super Bowls, but they probably weren't, like at that point, weren't super productive. Like, Ben was a good fantasy quarterback when he had Antonio Brown, and he was not really a good fantasy quarterback when he didn't have Antonio Brown. Like, he really, really just come down
sucked.
To that.
Hines Ward, okay.
I mean, yeah. And they always had good receivers, but it took like the best, literally the best receiver in the NFL to like, you have that weapon, like that elevates you. And you know, I think the coaching staff too is like, okay, we got to throw more because we've got Antonio Brown, may as well utilize him. You have this crazy guy on the team, may as well give him all these receptions.
Damn ball, right?
Anyway, so yeah, you continue on the list of your other players.
Yeah, so at running back, you know, LaDainian Tomlinson was just ridiculous. And so I remember one time I was playing against him, and he was playing against the then Redskins, and I think he ran over Ryan Clark in the overtime period from, like, the 35-yard line. He was, you know, just a charger at this point. Just went right through the, you know, the B gap or the two hole, and then hit Ryan Clark about, I don't know, 15 feet. You met him 15 feet in the open field and just ran him over right to the end zone. I was just like, I was playing against him. I was like, yo, my gosh. I was at a wedding. I'm just like looking at my phone, the early days of phones. Like, did he just run for a 40-yard touchdown against me? He scored like 35 points that game. So I only had him one season, but he was just a monster. He crushed me year after year. So yeah, I got to respect him since he beat me so many times and give it to Tomlinson. And then
I have a similar, not quite because it was not really fantasy relevant, but like bad football experiences. Like that's double. Cause like, not only is it, he's scoring against you on your fantasy team, but he's beating your actual NFL team. So you got the double whammy on that one. I was at a wedding and I'm super happy I was at the wedding to not watch this, but the Hamilton Tiger Cats lost a game 60-1. They managed a rouge. They didn't get shut out, the coach was also the GM, so he stepped down as coach but retained his GM, and that's when the June Jones era started for Hamilton. I guess you know college, he was the longtime coach at Hawaii, I believe, but he was the OC to start that season, and then that was the game where it's like, okay, no, I'm taking over as head coach.
I think that's when
the Jeremiah Masoli era at quarterback started for the Tiger Cats. So just when you said wedding and bad experience, I thought of that one. It's like, well, if I had to miss a game, it would have probably been that one.
It's a good one not to – yeah, for sure. Well, speaking of not missing a game, my guy is JJ. He did miss that game against JR last year, basically, because JR shut him down. Speaking, you know, of the callback, but Justin Jefferson, he's just the truth, man. I love him. I love him so much. I love him so much. I picked him last year and two of my teams that I won the championship on. So I'm not stupid. You know, him and Amon-Ra. I love him and Amon-Ra. Those are some of my boys. So,
I guess, JJ, do you think he's got a good chance to do what Jerry Rice and Antonio Brown, and I mean, if people are playing in the 30s, Don Hutson did, but repeat as wide receiver one, because that's
it. Depends. He needs a quarterback. I mean, this year, yeah, he could repeat, but like for the longevity of his career, he needs a quarterback. And so, the rumblings are that Kirk is going to go to San Francisco to meet up with Shanahan for a reunion tour. And so, I don't know. I've got no clue, but. He could be up there in the consistent, you know, Jerry Rice every year being the best if he has a quarterback. And, you know, last year they threw the ball more than they've been throwing the ball, you know, before. I already forgot the coach. I can see his little beady red face. Zimmerman, I can see it. But, you know, it's a different offense now, too. And I like that for Justin Jefferson. And they trust him. You saw it last year in the Buffalo game against one of the best secondaries. He threw the ball to him all the time. And he just made one of the best catches in the history of the game. So he's unstoppable unless he gets hurt, you know. And then also if you press coverage, and he's got to get better at that. But, you know, we'll figure it out, I'm sure.
They play him in the slot a lot. It's fine.
Yeah, get him in motion. Like, that's the thing. If you've played Madden, you know how to get people off in rub routes. You know how to get people in space. You know how to do all kinds of things. It just makes me so mad when I watch football and you can just tell the coaches are just so just, I mean, they're coaches, I know, but they don't know space. NFL's about space, all about space.
And these coaches need to play more Madden.
They do. Oh my goodness. My favorite was when I'd take the plays in the Madden. We go play Turkey Bowl up at my, you know, we're 20 years old, 19 years old, whatever it was. And I'd have these plays on Madden that I'd create in the Madden lab. And then I'd go to the field and I'd be like, all right, here's my note card. People like, you're stupid. And no, they'd be like, no, we're going to do this play. And then we'd get like touchdowns after every, like yeah, you get a play, this gets you a touchdown, you know? And so we'd be up like 4-0. People would be like, dude, he's got the cards. You know, I'm like, yeah, they're pretty simple. You just do rub routes and you do a little thing, you crisscross routes. It's just so many things. You run across the field. It's not hard to play football.
And when they're a DB and like they're pick routes, not rub routes.
Well, the thing is you don't even have to touch them. You just got to get into space and you know where they can't go. And then you just got to go around and you know, it's about it really, if you watch it, it's about footwork. It's knowing where you're going to step before somebody else steps. I mean, CeeDee Lamb's one of the best at it. I was watching him against, I forget who it was a couple years ago in like a practice scrimmage during the preseason. And he cut on a dime and his first foot plant, you thought he was going to open up and go downfield the way he, you know, he ran 15 yards and then opened up and you thought, oh, he's going. No, that was just, he turned like in midair. It was insane. The DB kept going and, you know, he caught the pass and made the highlight. We all went, ooh, on Twitter. So yeah. I do love CeeDee Lamb, by the way. He's a close second to JJ for me in the young receiver. So, and then tight end one's Gronk. I know he was hurt a lot, but man, 100 touchdowns. I mean, that guy was just, he's the Gronkinator. You know, I love Gronk and the seasons he was dominant, there's no one touching him. You're getting, you know, 14, 15 touchdowns. What are you going to do? That's just ridiculous. And the yards and, you know, he was just so massive and such a force in those times. And I know Aaron Hernandez was part of those teams, some of those teams too. And in those years, man, wow. Like the touchdowns for the tight ends were just off the charts for the Patriots for sure. I'm not a Pats fan, by the way. I don't like the Patriots or Tom Brady necessarily. So,
but you know, Gronk's kind of undeniable. You know, we get a lot of different answers, although I feel like I've heard Peyton Manning a lot this year in terms of the quarterback answer. But, you know, I think almost everyone answers Kelsey or Gronk. You occasionally get someone who will say an Antonio Gates, but those two.
Tony Gonzalez is really good, too. He was fluid, man. Like, he was just silk, you know. But Gronk's the man. He had a better quarterback. That's why.
Actually, I think someone recently did mention LaDainian Tomlinson as well. But, yeah, it's there's a reason those guys are keep getting named because they won so many people championships.
Of course, yeah.
All right, so now we get to the high five section. So top five, yeah, it's my favorite. Save the best for last, right? So
of course.
Top five categories, or top five in five different categories. So we're going to start with top five artists or bands.
Okay, so let me go 1 to 5 or 5 to 1. What's the...
Oh, some people don't even rank them. Some people just say 5. So honestly, it's up to you, however you want to. You can count down, count up.
So I'll say this. Pink Floyd is my favorite band of all time. I love Pink Floyd so much.
I wear the Pink Floyd shirt, not the Radiohead shirt.
Yeah, I mean Pink Floyd. My daughter has Pink Floyd shirts. I have the Scott Fish Pink Floyd shirts. Like, it's just, I love Pink Floyd. I listened to them in high school, got into them then, and I got a record player. Can't see it, but I got my record player. I've got the, if you zoom in back there, it's the Dark Side of the Moon is back there. So I also, you know, bought the record player just so I could listen to these albums and actually experience them on my headphones and like I would have like back in the day. So big Pink Floyd fan. I do like a lot of modern music, though, and it's more fluid than Pink Floyd. So Pink Floyd's like always there, you know, around. But like last 2 years ago, I went to a Kings of Leon concert live. I've always loved Kings of Leon, but I went live. I was in the very front row. It was right kind of when COVID was kind of getting out of COVID. And it was incredible. Like, I love them already, but I've been obsessed with them since then. Just put it on YouTube, just let it play for hours and whatever, you know, Kings of Leon comes on, I'm into it. So they're one of my favorites. And then the Killers. I love the Killers so much. They're not as played as much now as Pink Floyd and the Kings of Leon, but I do love the Killers. But right now, the two bands I'm listening to the most are The Strokes and Tame the Impala. And so those are just, they're more chill, you know. The Strokes are a little upbeat, but the Tame the Impala is a little bit more chill. I like to kind of just put them on, and then whatever playlists too are connected with them. I really kind of like the vibe, you know, that'll come from it. So different artists will come that I've never even heard of, but I love their music. Yeah, I think those are kind of where I'm at. I'm trying to move into I like rock and roll, but I also like the chill, you know, let my mind kind of rhythmically, like there's a song, I don't know what the name of it, but it goes, da-na, da-na, da-na-na-na-na-na-na. It just goes like that for like 6 minutes. And I just love it. It's just, it's not like, people aren't even singing words. I mean, it's not even words.
That's almost a very Pink Floyd-esque type of statement or style.
Right. And it's a little faster, but it's music is beautiful to me. So I like a wide range. I mean, also like Wu-Tang and stuff like that too, but I can't, like, the Wu cannot be down in the basement with the cuss words and the, you know, and the objectification of ladies and killing with swords. And I can't do the liquid swords down here. So
the killers is fine, but actually singing about killing, not so good.
Right. Right.
Now, another call out to Jeff Lambert, again, our founder here at Going for Two, because I'm pretty sure he was in the Wu-Tang division when Scott Fishbowl was music. I know he loves the Wu-Tang.
I was in the Pink Floyd division, so
I specifically chose bands I'd seen live, even though I love Pink Floyd as well. I was in the Incubus division.
Ooh. See, Incubus to me was not Pink Floyd-y, but they were... They had the chill in them. You know what I mean? Like it's
Aqueous Transmission could be a Pink Floyd song.
Oh man, like just turn the lava lamp on, you know, and just get into them. So I did like them. So yeah.
Actually, it rained when we saw them, only towards the end, but they played Aqueous Transmission as kind of a closing song, and you know, the water being such a key theme, I thought that seemed super appropriate.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
I guess I do have a question about Pink Floyd. Your number one choice. You mentioned Dark Side already, but is Dark Side of the Moon your favorite Pink Floyd album?
No, Wish You Were Here is my favorite album.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh yeah. I mean, I like Have a Cigar. I like all those songs, but you know, Shine On Your Crazy Diamond is one of my favorite songs of all time, and Wish You Were Here might be my favorite song of all time. I had a friend who one time in high school, and kids don't do drugs, but in high school we did some. And then he played it on the guitar and we sang the song outside together, the whole thing through, you know, we were doing the whole thing. And
All the Rick Wright effects too, not just.
Oh yeah. We were just.
Did you like for the first part of it, do you like cover the guitar so it sounds like it's on the radio and not as loud? And then
he was like tapping it with his, he was doing the whole thing. It was just one of those moments when, you know, I loved Pink Floyd back then, but then to hear that song played, it was Rodrigo who played it. And that was just one of those moments. You're like, holy moly, this is my favorite song. I don't have the same connection that Pink Floyd has to it and the history of England and Britain and the war and kind of the society. And if you understand about England a little bit, which I've learned a little bit now that I live there for a year, it's depressing, sad. It's not great. It's why the teachers needed to leave the kids alone. You know, just very misogynistic and just not a great place. So that you know, but I love Pink Floyd. So
Wish You Were Here is actually the first song I learned how to play on guitar.
Ooh,
and I think it's like strategically it makes a lot of sense because like you're working on your chords, but it's also the riff as well. So you're learning like guitar fingerings at the same time as learning chords. So it's actually a good introduction song to allow you to learn other things. So I could see why my guitar teacher chose that one first.
Very cool.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll get to top five books now.
Okay. So... you know, I put my books there and I thought, man, I'm like the oldest guy ever who's going to say, but I'm a teacher. And so I wanted to go read some of these books, but I fell in love with a few of them. My favorite book of all time is written by Fyodor Dostoevsky. It is The Brothers Karamazov. And it's the story of a murder of a father by a son. And there's four sons in the story. And you don't know which son has murdered the father. They're all suspects. There's like, you know, different character traits that they imbue, and there's different kind of symbolism that they have. The devil, one of the famous scenes in literature, is involved with one of the brothers and meets with him and kind of, you know, tempts him in a way. So it's one of my favorite books. It's also it's a Russian story. It's not American. And so I had to learn about Russian history, and I've read a biography series. I'm almost done it. I kind of saved the last book. I stopped like 10 years ago because I wanted to save it. On Dostoevsky and all of his writing and all of his milieu and all the things he went through, from his prison to his writings before prison to prison to the being about to be executed and then calling it off right before they shot him. He had the blindfold on. He was standing up there waiting to be murdered by the state. And it's a crazy story of his life becoming an epileptic gambler who lost all his money, who traveled around with this young, you know, bride. It's crazy. He's one of the best writers in the history of you know, kind of literature. So love some Brothers Karamazov. And in that same vein too, I love War and Peace and Les Mis. So kind of in that older European history model. And then I graduated to Catch 22 by Joseph Heller. He was a pilot or kind of like a gunner in World War II. And he wrote just a scathing critique of power and, you know, organizations and the military. And I loved it. It's one of my favorite stories. I wish that someone wrote a story about teaching like that, because you have things like that where they're like, teach these kids. You're like, okay, there's no classroom. Figure it out. You're like, what? What are you talking about? I don't have a place.
Nature class. It's every nature class every session.
Right. It's just like so many problems happen in education. I think people are aware of it. But I do love Les Mis for, you know, the French stuff and the French Revolution. And then off of that, it's a textbook. I read a textbook. I'm sorry. I'm a nerd. I'm a loser. It's called Citizens, A Chronicle of the French Revolution. It's one of the most interesting stories ever because it just explains how the French society ate their monarchy and then ate each other. And then we're like citizens were going in and assassinating senators in their beds, in their baths, like women, like 25-year-old women would like pretend to be invalid or whatever. And like servants. And then they would sneak in and like kill a senator who had just voted their guy. It was crazy. And so Les Mis is a tiny story in there, but the actual French Revolution is intriguing to me. So that's my spinoff. And then Cormac McCarthy's Border Trilogy is one of my favorite stories. It's all the pretty horses and then a couple other stories, but all the characters intertwine there. And it's just a gritty Southwestern Mexico survival story from these characters. A lot of death, a lot of just terribleness. But I think it really does capture the human spirit and survival. And it made a good movie. All the pretty horses. I think Penelope Cruz is in it. I think Matt Damon is in it too. So he just died a couple days ago as well. So shout out Mr. McCarthy. He wrote The Road, which is another bleak tale.
Well, it's funny, bleakness. There was kind of a theme through all those books, and actually it reminded me of something I was going to say about like why I love Wish You Were Here, the album, so much. It's Sid's theme and like this melodic theme they use throughout the album. And I've loved like concept albums, not just from a lyrical perspective, but from a musical perspective. And I think
right.
Nailed it as best they could have on Wish You Were Here. So that's why.
Oh, man.
That is the best thing for an album.
You can just feel Sid in that song. And I mean, that whole story too, he was actually housed in a place here in my county for a little while in Maryland during his journey of for mental health care. So very sad. He, if you don't know, he was one of the founding members of the band who was unable to participate in society, and he built a wall around himself. And that's also in the wall. So yeah, very cool.
Yeah, for sure. Apparently he actually showed up during the recording sessions for Wish You Were Here, and they didn't recognize him, even though it,
oh, wow.
Yeah, like he had gained weight, lost all his hair, or shaved all his hair, or whatever, and just kind of showed up. And at first, they didn't realize who it was. And then, my God, writing an album about you, and you show up here. I think at that point, it probably would have been like 7-8 years, maybe a little less, since any of them had seen him. So,
I didn't know that. That's crazy.
All right, well, yeah, just one more theme in the Syd Barrett treasure.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll go do top five movies.
Okay, so, man, as I read all these, there's a theme of bleakness and tragedy and all these things. Also, guys, I'm a guy. Like, I grew up with sisters, and my dad was like a super, he was an alpha male before alpha males. He was actually a real one, and they're not great. So I mentioned that earlier. it's not, Andrew Tate's not a real alpha male. Those are just fake posers who are just misogynistic. An alpha male, somebody who wakes up, drinks like 7 cups of coffee, and is like, I will go and drive this truck to New Hampshire. You know, you're like, holy shit. Okay, dad. All right. Enjoy the New Hampshire drive. Then he come back and be like, I saw 6 dead people today. I'm like, I don't want to hear about this, dad. I'm 7 and I'm trying to play Legos. So anyway, but Saving Private Ryan, gory, bloody action, film. I think this is the reason why. that movie changed the game when it came to what I expected in a movie about war, about like the reality of it. A lot of the times it just was kind of fake, or you didn't get to see up close and personal. And that beach scene in D-Day is just one of the best scenes in the history of cinematic theater. I watch guys crying in there, like men who have been in the wars just weeping like next to me as they watch this thing. And you could just tell how poignant it was. No one was talking, you know. It was not a, you know, people's throats were just like, I can't believe this. So incredible movie. Goodfellas, because, you know, Goodfellas, you know, you got it's Goodfellas. I don't have to explain Goodfellas to anybody. Heat. I also don't need to explain Heat to anybody either. So I don't have to.
It's funny because I brought up Gladys's name because last week on In No Particular Order, they did crime and Western movies. That's what they do on No Particular Order. They just mock draft a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, Goodfellas was mentioned, but I don't think Heat was mentioned. And it's like, oh, that would be one. Yeah.
I love me some Heat. And I mean, it's, you have De Niro, you have Pacino, you've got Val Kilmer, you've got Tom Sizemore. The story is a pretty good story as well. You have
a lot of depth of different characters too. Like this is,
yeah. Right. Right. I mean, even Wayngrove, the kind of bad guy within the bad guy, gets a whole story arc and a whole, you know, connection with somebody else. And
Natalie Portman is a teenager.
Kills herself. Tries to kill herself. Yeah. I mean, it's
kind of bleak. But you mentioned Guy in Ultraviolets. That's one of the best shootout scenes ever.
Oh my goodness. It is. When you see a shootout scene like that, it's just like, you know, not that you ever want to see that in real life. You never want to see that in real life. You want that to be your cinematic experience, though, in that fake world. You want that you've nailed it. Lots of shooting, not lots of innocent people dying, lots of bad guys dying, maybe one or two cops dying. You know, I mean, it was a fair shootout, but it went on for like 20 minutes. And that is what you loved. It was realistic. Yeah, you felt it, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's the second movie Pacino and De Niro were in together. But like the first one was Godfather Part Two, and they were like, De Niro was in just the flashback scenes as the young Don. So like they were never on screen together. So Heat is the first time they're actually on screen together. That diner scene with like the whole discussion between them.
It's a geek out scene for movie nerds because you get them face to face for the first time. And you'd think since they're in Godfather Two, that these are people who've been, and they've never sat with each other and ever acted in the same space. So so Heat for me. Next one's a little bit of a nerd movie. Well, I'll just say this. Godfather is I love Godfather. So there's Godfather 1 particularly with Al Pacino in it and Marlon Brando, one of the just my favorite movies of all time. But my last one is Master and Commander. Another wartime movie. I've read not all the books, but a lot of the books that the story's based on. So I kind of had a little bit of background knowledge. I really liked it. My wife likes him as well. She's read the stories, and I like Russell Crowe in this, and I like that he gets his ass kicked a bunch in it, and I like he gets outsmarted a bunch, and he's not the best. His crew does not like him. The doctor doesn't like him. He has problems, and he overcomes them. And I like the period piece too, because, you know, like I said, I read Les Mis and War and Peace. And so you understand, I've read books on Trafalgar, the Battle of Trafalgar. I understand what happened with, you know, Lord Nelson. And so kind of understanding the whole history of these naval battles that have taken place with the French and the English. And at this point, Napoleon, I think in the movie is, you know, ravaging Europe and stuff. So I like all those types of movies.
French Revolution.
It is. You get sucked in because you know a lot about a topic, and then you expand on, oh, it connects to this. And oh, this is what, oh, they're out there trying to hunt private whalers so they could fund the war efforts for Napoleon. Oh, okay. It all makes sense. They're all doing shit for reasons. You just didn't understand it because you're like, what are these stupid people doing back then? They couldn't even have internet. They had to poop into boxes. What's wrong with these morons? Oh, no. They were doing lots of stuff. So,
all right. Top five TV shows.
Okay. I'm going to throw you here because I'm going to do dramas and comedies. So I injected my own little, you know, thing in here.
Yeah, I'll
do
that's it fair. The guest gets their ways.
Yeah. Okay. So my favorite series of all time in a one-off season is True Detective season one. I don't think there's anything. I've watched every episode at least 10 times, 1 to 10 times, every single one. And it just, the ending, maybe people critiqued about it, but when you get to go into the devil's den and fight the devil and you live, that's crazy. You know, I like that. Maybe it's okay. You know, maybe the world is okay. The devil gets slain, right? Maybe one of them died. I don't care. It didn't hurt me. You know, people at the end were like, oh, it's just a buddy movie. They just lived. You know, Rust was so rusty and terrible and gross. He banged his wife, right? And at the end, he was still his friend. Like, that's just, I mean, come on. That's deep stuff there. Brother stuff. So
I love season three. I'll be honest. Like, I'm not crazy for season two. The last time I watched them, the time shifting in both season one and season three, I love that dynamic. So I kind of like intercut them. Okay, I'll start with a bit of season three, then a bit of season one and back and forth just to get that time experience. So
season three is great. I did love season three again. And I think it brought back like the spiritual supernatural type element to it that, you know, not that Vince Vaughn didn't have it, but it that seemed more like just kind of like just gangster slime, just a bunch of gangster slime.
It was too, like, you know, LA, West Coast, California, like this was back to the deep South. Like, I guess first season was Louisiana and the second season three is Arkansas, I believe. So like it's that same kind of region.
Nobody wants like oil derricks and like, you know, telecom infrastructure in the background of your story when you're walking in a desert. Like it's, I mean, ugh, whatever. But okay, so that is where we're going to start. Secondly, though, the best series I love altogether from start to finish, and it didn't get finished, is Hannibal on NBC. It's a serial killer drama. I love it. Just the Mads Mikkelsen, Hugh Dancy. There's just they were incredible. Lawrence Fishburne is in it as Jack Crawford, and Mads Mikkelsen though is a better. And I'm going to say, I don't care who says this and what they say, he's a better Hannibal Lecter, way better Hannibal Lecter Anthony Hopkins. Yeah, Sir Anthony. I'm sorry, Sir Anthony. After watching Mads, like, muted performance and not being like, but just being so scary by being calm and the way that he did it. I mean, it's incredible. So I love those kind of mind murder movies where people are just doing crazy shits and it's not what it seems. And that series is wild.
I do wonder if that's very appropriate to the character, right? Because we're seeing, you know, Hopkins play Lecter after he's been incarcerated, after everyone knows who he is. So he doesn't have to be as careful. Whereas Madison's version, he's actively trying not to go to prison. Like he's still trying to
blend
this serial killer and to blend in. So he's got to be more muted about it. But yeah, I do agree that
I mean, Anthony Hopkins is probably an overall better actor maybe than Mads Mikkelsen, but there's been some movies that I've seen of Mads Mikkelsen. Like there's this movie where he's like a Celtic slave who he doesn't talk the whole movie. Like he doesn't even talk, you know, he's just a fighter. And he helps a bunch of fight. Like he has like premonitions and visions. You know, you're just like, this is the craziest movie I've ever seen. Is this Mads Mikkelsen in it? Just he's not even talking. So I do love Sir Anthony, though. I don't want to get in, you know, him after me. Okay.
Yeah, I'll ratioed for saying.
I know. But, I mean, here's the thing. I've watched and also in movies, you can't get in depth as much as a character. You can get into three seasons of playing a character. Like, it's just different. You've got so much more screen time that Mads Mikkelsen has to own the character, in my opinion. So, but.
Well, and I guess, like, especially Silence of the Lambs, there's so little screen time for Lecter, right? Like, he's got to be kind of outrageous the scenes he is there to.
Right. That is true. I like how you're putting it that way. You got to kind of steal what you got. You can't, you know, like kind of like Marlon Brando in The Godfather. You're not in all the scenes. So, in the ones you're in, you got to have your you know, your oranges and all that.
It sounds like from everything, because I've obviously never met Brando, but everyone who's said anything about Brando is he steals every scene he's in. Like he's got this presence that about him. That good.
Yeah. So True Detective, Hannibal, Sopranos. I love the Sopranos. I didn't like the ending. I actually thought that my stream had broken. I was like, what the
fuck? What happened? Scene. What are you doing?
Dude, did it not? Because I was pirating it, you know? And so I was like, did I get a bad stream? What happened? Nope. Up until then, the first five seasons were just, oh man, some of the best TV. And I had all of this. So here's what I did. My friend had bought the first five seasons. He lent them to me. And then I would watch one every single Sunday night at 8 o'clock at my house for 52 straight weeks. I did not watch the whole series through. Like I could have, I had his DVDs for a year. I could have binged. I did not binge. I knew I could have every week. It was like, nope, this is what I'm doing. I don't care. Nope. Someone's, I don't care. Nope. Go to bed. Nope. This is what I'm doing every single Sunday night. And it was just, I loved it. It was like my routine. So Sopranos, Breaking Bad. I love Breaking Bad. And then The Shield. So like all my stories are like murder, killing. Also, I'm not a violent person. I've never even assaulted anybody in real life. Never punched anybody.
But that's why you watch it, right? It's so engaging because it's not typical.
I don't understand why people do it, honestly. So when I watch these things, it's like, like I'm a scientist. Like, why?
Yeah, fascinating observations.
Right. I just, because I've not ever even choked a bitch, you know? So never. And that, but
I've also never choked a female dog either.
No, well, I've never choked anyone. I never put my hands on anybody, male, female. My wife's beat me up a few times, but just how it goes. Yeah.
But she also gave you the 20th anniversary pin.
So yeah, I don't mean physically. I mean mentally. She's, you know, she's playing these games with me. I can't play with my wife. You know what I mean? Like the mind reading game. I can't read my wife's mind. She thinks I can. I cannot. So I lose.
All right, well, we'll get to the less serious tones. So I guess top five favorite comedy shows.
Okay, so I'm going to say a few cartoons. I love Big Mouth from Nick Kroll. It's one of my favorite series, modern series ever. But then if you look in the history of kind of comedy, The Simpsons is iconic. I love The Simpsons as a Simpson. Scott Simpson, I've been in a prime with The Simpsons for a long time. And then Family Guy and South Park, all of those are some of my favorite kind of just they're mocking society. All of them are satire. Voltaire would be proud that our satire is now delivered via cartoon. But it really is. And I love how they attack different, you know, bigotry and different hatred and different, like, you know, Homer Simpson is the quintessential biggest idiot ever. And people go, oh, he's funny. No, he's you. He's you. He's you.
Supposed to be the average American.
Supposed to be you.
That was the intention at first.
I mean, he takes a gun. Good.
He takes a gun to change the TV channel.
Yeah, he shoots the TV with the gun. Like, that's so American. It's just such a scathing critique. And people go, I like it. That's funny, you know. So, but The Simpsons are great. And then Always Sunny. I'm sorry. Listen, Always Sunny is probably my number one because it's just so just. You got to watch it. If you don't watch it, Always Sunny, it's just, it's like the funniest show I've ever seen in my life. So yeah, those are my top five.
Always Sunny in Philadelphia. But I guess it's funny that you're no longer a Washington fan. So you can cheer for the division rival city.
For sure. Oh yeah. Charlie. You know, I mean, those guys are funny.
All right. And we'll end with, again, games, you know, football, gathering with people. You're always going to also want to eat food. So what are your top five game day foods?
Okay, this might just sound like hacky, but pizza, pepperoni pizza, you know, sausage pizza. I mean, just, you know, loaded down. I do like a lot of sauce. I like a lot of cheese. I like my pizza to be more gourmet style, not Chicago necessarily, but, you know, Bo McBrayer makes a good style of pizza. It's kind of more Detroit style, more just you just put all the stuff on it. You got your hot peppers, you have your sausage, your onions, you know, it's a cornucopia of delight. So I'd say pizza. And then you gotta have your wings drenched in hot box sauce for sure. You know, whether you know you like them dry or hot or wet, whatever style you like them, wings are a must for me. You just eat like 6, 7, 8, 9, you don't even know what's going on. Wings, and then nachos. I'm a nachos guy. I'll make nachos. Now, I am doing a 60-day no cheese, so I can't do pizza or nachos right now.
Well, luckily, it's not football season, at least NFL football season.
No. I'll be ready to do that. I'll be fine. But nachos for sure, particularly loaded, fully loaded nachos with lots of the same things I talked about on the pizza. You know, if you have your choice of meats, steak, pulled pork is delicious, chicken, okay, whatever. For sure, nachos with tons of jalapenos and salsa. And then I'll go breakfast food for my next two, some sausage, egg, and cheese, either bagel or, you know, sandwich or brioche bun or pretzel bun. And then, you know, quesadillas just stuffed with all kinds of breakfast sausage and stuff. So, as you've noticed, I am in love with, you know, killing and fat guy foods. So, just so you guys know, I am on a diet. I'm not allowed to eat any of these things, and I am losing weight. And I ate bananas and strawberries for breakfast this morning. So, you know, these are things I wish I could eat. I don't even eat them anymore.
I guess the breakfast foods come in handy for game days of, like, when there's international games, London games, or I guess Germany games now.
Oh, yeah. Germany games, we'll do no beer this year, but we'll do, like, Bavarian pretzels and, you know, a little cheese dip and you know, maybe some German pancakes just to kind of, you know, drive my wife crazy. So, you know.
All right. Well, I guess, you know, this is more than a bite-sized episode, an hour and a half in. But
sorry, I talk a lot.
Honestly, most of these episodes are kind of around an hour and a half. I feel like I talk more than I should. I'm not just asking questions. I'm interjecting. I'm talking too. So that's what happens. But yeah, fun conversation. Really appreciate you for joining, Scott. For everyone in the chat, Gladys and Jamie were both there. Yeah, want to shout out our sponsor again, Underdog Fantasy. Again, use the promo code GF2 or scan the QR code on screen. They will double your initial deposit up to $100. Play the best ball contest, the pick'ems for all the different sports, all that. And of course, you know, subscribe to go over to YouTube channel. You know, I'm guessing if you're watching this on YouTube, maybe it's on Twitch, Facebook, wherever it is, though, head over to YouTube, subscribe to the Go Over Two Live. Be sure to like and comment through all the videos as well. It really helps us out. And just check out everything on the network. I know tomorrow night, Speak on It. Danny and Dee, they always do such a phenomenal job. Those guys are funny. Those are some of my favorite comedians. Not even stand-up comedians. They're usually sitting down for the podcast.
Sit-down comedians.
Check them out. Of course, Jeff and Ryan will be back on Wednesday, every Wednesday, on the Armchair Fantasy Show. And I'll be co-hosting the Dynasty Gambit on Thursday again. So, you know, want more Dynasty talk? That'll be, Thursday the 29th. So, and then Gladys will take over Monday and Thursday next week. And her and I will just alternate back and forth. I also wanted to, you know, shout out the Going for Two Live, the goingfor2.com website, but also specific section, the PLP section, Personal League Podcasts. And I know we're starting to get booked up pretty full on this. So if you want your own Personal League podcast, you know, be sure to sign up soon, goingfor2.com/PLP. What we do is it's a paid service, and we will do a deep dive in your league. However many teams it is, we'll represent every team. Go through and give strategy advice for each team, how to operate. So, this year we're doing them live. So the league mates for all these PLPs can also, they themselves can come in, ask us questions. We can ask them questions too, and have that interaction. Used to do it just send the audio out. But yeah, Jeff decided this year, partially to enhance the experience, also partially to kind of like, we have to do it because we set the live date. So like no lollygagging on these, because last year we got quite overwhelmed as it got to August. So Personal League Podcasts, I believe the next one will be, I guess, the 10th, I believe, which is, you know, normally we try to do this on a Friday. That one will end up being on a Monday. So that week of press coverage, I assume I'm still doing a press coverage episode, but it'll have to probably be a little earlier. Might have to start at 7 instead of 8, knowing that you go over an hour and a half usually. So So check out the PLP, I guess. That next one will be on the 10th. I think technically we'll be doing two that week. I think that we have one for that Friday as well, the 14th. So PLP season's here. So if you want to sign up, and I think it's $100 per league. So if you have a 12-team league, that's less than $10 per manager to get all this great advice. I wouldn't call us experts, but analysts at the Going for Two Network, a few of us come together for these PLPs. So anyway, Scott, thank you very much. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. And I have not done any content this year so far. It's okay. I will, though, be writing my wide receiver two theory article this summer. And if you guys haven't heard of wide receiver two theory, it's the basic idea that wide receiver ones on most teams are overvalued in ADP and wide receiver twos are undervalued. So it's not a deep river to cross. If you look at the data, every team's wide receiver one that's drafted every year does not finish as a wide receiver one. Justin Jefferson, I did write about him in his breakout year, talked about the emergence opportunity that was there because Stephon Diggs left, and he could be a breakout contender that year. So nothing, I did not predict Justin Jefferson, but those rookie receivers every year, you look at who's coming in, how could they impact a team's offense, and then you look at the patterns of how the younger wide receivers have been taking over the league year by year by year. So it's a long long read, probably like, you know, 7 or 8 weeks of reading. No, I'm kidding. It's about, you know, about 15 minutes of reading.
Not a Dostoevsky novel.
No, it's not. I was just teasing on that. It's not a Les Mis. It's not a 1,200, 1,300, 1,400 page book. But it will give you just some historic trends of data. I'm not making this up. Actually, I asked J.J. Zacharyson when I started this if there was anyone who's done this yet, because I wanted him for a mailbag to answer my question, and he had not. And he said no one had done it yet. So I said, damn it, I got to do it myself. And then 4 years later, I've done it every year. So I'll let you guys know when that's coming out, because that's fun to read about who could break out and who could get you some points that you didn't expect.
Because I have heard, I think J.J. has talked about the stat too, like how many years in a row we've had multiple teams have multiple top 24 wide receivers. Yep. Like, it's, you know, I mean, the classic example of the Rams, Sean McVay's first season, they had three top 24 wide receivers. So if that's got multiple from several teams, that also means like wide receiver one on certain teams aren't producing up to par. So
right. Wide receiver twos on other teams like Jalen Waddle are better than wide receiver ones on teams like in Pittsburgh. So
yeah. So yeah, no. That's more proof in the pudding there. But
Mayor of Miami stats right there coming at you.
Yeah, had to end with the Dolphin, of course.
Of course. Yeah.
But this was another episode of Press Coverage. And thank you, Scott Simpson, and I am Kyle Senra. Got some S names there. Super. And I guess we'll see you all in 2 weeks. Bye for now.